Okay, is everybody back?
Yeah.
Good, good.
I don't think it's ever happened that people haven't come back, but we always check.
Yes. Well, it gets really silent on the phone when we go through that process. And
yeah, it
does. See it come back on the computer. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't. It gets it recording, and then everybody's back. Okay, so we have Scott Carley, I'm Tamara Ledley, and Mark Drexler on the phone. Who else joined us?
Martha.
Hi, Martha.
Martha Sean. I'm going to go on mute. So.
Mute, okay.
That's great, Martha.
Okay. Well, we usually start these off with announcements. So does anybody have announcements?
I was just going to come and just mention that we have a set of three presentations coming up in the next couple of weeks. So, and I'm just getting the list out. I hadn't put things up yet. So let's see. I think next week, in fact, Tamara, we could even talk a little bit about that right now, is we have a what I guess I've been calling a share-a-thon, but we actually haven't figured out what this is to elicit.
Right. I was going to be talking to Marion tomorrow more about it. So just to give everybody context, Frank Niepold and Rebecca Anderson, so Frank is from NOAA, and Rebecca is from ACE, the Alliance for Climate Education. We're suggesting that we try to identify resources around solutions, I believe. Is that correct?
That's right.
Scott? Okay. So it's an area where the clean collection is rather thin. And so we wanted to sort of identify the kinds of resources we were looking for. For those of you who are not familiar with the clean collection, we have a collection of over 670 educational resources comprised of activities, visualizations, and videos for grades 6 through 16 that was originally funded by a grant from the National Science Foundation and now has evolved to be with maintenance funding from NOAA to maintain the quality of the collection and the integrity of the review process. And so we identify new resources that either address the climate or energy essential principles and put them through quite a rigorous review process, which I won't go into now, but you can find it on the CLEAN portal, the details of how that process proceeds. But we don't have a lot of it. While research generally shows that students become much more engaged in climate change issues if they can see that there are solutions, we don't have as many resources in that area. So Frank and Rebecca and Marion Grogan works with me at Turk to develop and maintain the clean collection. We're going to sort of make an appeal next week and to have people try to think about sharing potential resources that they might have around the solutions.
Well, that is next week. Are there any questions around that? Mark,
I'm curious how you're. I'm familiar with the clean site, but when you say resources, are you specifically talking sort of video kinds of things? Are you talking about websites in general? You're obviously not talking about publications, it doesn't look like.
No, it's not publications. So we actually have very specific definitions of the kinds of resources we review.
Okay.
Generically, they're activities, visualizations, and videos. And activities,
right. Okay.
The constraint there is that they're self-contained, so that reviewing them is possible rather than open-ended. We do have a review criteria for units and modules, which is something that might be a sequence of activities that one might build on the other, which makes them individually not reviewable into the clean collection. We piloted reviewing some things, and it became apparent that in order to review a unit or module, you actually did have to apply the review criteria for an individual activity to each piece. And and then have an overarching review of the whole thing in order to assure the quality of the entire unit or module. And the reason there aren't any in the collection is because of the expense. We didn't have any money left to really do that in a rigorous way. Mm-hmm. What I have asked people to consider, if they're developing something that's more of an extensive kind of resource like that, to build the review cost into their proposals so that we can do that. So that said, what we really are talking about are activities and sequences of activities. We do not review web pages. We do not review publications, those kinds of things. There's other places to get those, and we do have partnerships where there are sites that have those kinds of things, but that's how we've defined the collection thus far.
Okay.
I guess the other piece of this, Tamara and Mark, is just that the content of the clean or the elements of the clean collection are actually syndicated on climate.gov/teaching. So if you see things on that website, I guess virtually all of the resources there are coming from the clean collection. They've been reviewed.
Exactly.
So
one
it has
of the
on prominence on the federal website too.
Right.
Okay.
One of the reasons we have the ongoing funding from NOAA is because it is syndicated to the climate.gov site, and so they want to maintain the quality of those resources.
Okay. And a very quick question: what are some of the statistics for these materials? I mean, how many are people using these across the country in high volume or not?
We do have web statistics from each of the sites. I actually haven't looked at them recently, but the last time I looked, there was on the order of 12,000 hits a month on both the clean portal and on NOAA, so that would make 24,000 a month. And the NOAA one is just for the teaching climate section, those numbers. One of the things we found that it actually is extends our reach tremendously to syndicate to a different organization. So we basically doubled the number of hits we had by syndicating to NOAA, and we are trying to get it syndicated to other places. So the Alliance for Climate Education, ACE, is interested, and PBS Learning Media has also been interested in potentially syndicating the collection. I would anticipate with four places through which the resources can be visible and discoverable, that we would our hits would go up by on the order of a factor of four. So that's just based on the having done that once. Obviously, the climate.gov site is a very high visibility site, but so are some of these others. So much more so than the clean portal itself.
Okay.
But one of the other things that we're trying to do, and this is a work in progress, they're not live yet, is to define what we've called teaching and learning paths. These are where we give examples of putting together resources from the clean collection to help teachers address particular aspects of the next generation science standards so that they can effectively teach the climate change in their classroom while addressing those standards.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the process of developing. We have very, very little money to do that, actually. So we have a small amount of money from NOAA through the Clean Core funding to develop some examples, and I've been busy writing proposals to develop more robust and tested versions of those. But I think that we're planning for at least the pilot ones to go live during the summer.
Okay.
Well, I can go on with the other two presentations coming up next.
Why don't you do that?
Yeah, David Herring is the Director of Communications and Education at the NOAA Climate Program Office. So he works extensively with the White House. And he's going to talk about something. It must be off the climate.gov website, too, but it's the Climate Resilience Toolkit that has been developed.
Right.
There's a separate website for that, a lot of great materials. And it's more what I would say is sort of complementary in some ways, because Mark, you might be more interested in that if you're not familiar with it. It's more directed towards decision makers. A lot of what we're talking about, that we do here in the clean network is both formal and informal education and communication. Mm-hmm. I guess those are kind of like our three foci. Formal education, which is what Tamara was talking about, and the Clean Collection certainly was developed for. We talk a lot about informal education and how complementary it is to formal education. And then also the whole issue, and it's something that you're very interested in, is the whole idea of how one communicates climate science to all kinds of audiences. We've, over the, whatever, almost, is it 8 years almost? I think we're close to 8 years now that this network has been in existence, and that's been a real focus.
Yeah, that's true.
Gosh.
January 2008.
Yep, that's right. And so that whole communication issue, is we've had a lot of telecons on that, and certainly when we sometimes get together, mostly at the American Geophysical Union meeting, a lot of folks on this network actually physically meet during those at the so-called AGU in December in San Francisco. That's also a major topic of a lot of the presentations that are given there. So that's just sort of another piece of the context of that. David is, I don't think we've actually talked about the Climate Resilience Network or Toolkit before, and so that would be very interesting to have David talk about that. And then the week after that, and that's on the 16th, is we have Emily Claude, who has worked with us really over the last couple of years, particularly around the National Climate Assessment 3, the version 3. And they're now gearing up for the fourth assessment, which I think as Frank's told me, I think it's every 4 years that's required. And so it's an ongoing process, and Emily's going to bring us up to date on how that is proceeding. And, you know, the special reports, there's a bunch of things that are ongoing. It's not just simply a report every 4 years now. It's an ongoing process. And we knew that when we were working on the educational sort of implications or uses of the National Climate Assessment version 3. But I think this is, as we move to the fourth one, the engagement with the education community is probably going to be even more intense than it was in sort of the aftermath of version 3. I don't know, Tamara, if you have any other comments about that's sort of my take on both those talks coming up.
Yes, it was always intended that the current process would be ongoing, so that there's a group called the NCA Net, and they actually have a monthly teleconference that was actually yesterday, engaging the broader community. So there, if Mark, if you're interested, they do have affinity groups related to communication also. We've mostly been involved in the education affinity group. But anyway, it's another avenue to think about.
Yeah.
So that's the next couple of weeks. We've had sort of one talk, I guess, in January. And normally we try to have two each month. So in February we're having three. Then March is only one so far. So we're always looking for new presentations and things that are of interest to our network, which is, you know, where are we? About 450 people who are on our listserv, something like that.
Actually, we have over 550 now.
Oh, it's really increased in the last while. That's great.
Yeah.
So we, you know, we have these calls, and as Tamara said, you know, we have maybe 10 people normally, and with a major presentation, we can have 35, 40, something like that. But a lot of people follow what's going on also on the listserv, too. That seems to be really important for some folks. We've had people say, gee, that's too much, but we keep, getting so many emails per day. And we just said, well, we do have, daily digest and I think even a weekly one, so you can tone it down if it's too much. But there's a lot of good information that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way of going at it.
Yeah. So, and I can give you an update on just the activity last week. So the National Council for Science and the Environment had their annual conference last week. The theme of the conference was food, energy, and water, the food, energy, water nexus. And Frank Niepold and I were there representing CLEAN and the CLEAN Network. We were part of a session we were just really combined with a lot of community colleges and four-year colleges. And I just gave an update of the activities of the Clean Network and our efforts around getting input on collective impact. So I gave that overview of what collective impact is. And we'll actually be, just for the next meeting, is the AAAS meeting in Washington, D.C. in a couple of weeks. And we do have a symposium there on enabling effective climate literacy, collective impact. And I'll be, again, giving an overview of the collective impact input that we received from the community over the past 3 or 4 years. Most of you were probably aware of the survey that we did in October and November. We still haven't analyzed all the results from that survey, but that will feed into the follow-on to the survey we did in 2013, which we published the results of those a year ago. So we're continuing to have those conversations around collective impact. We will make a presentation on this call probably late in the spring when we have a chance to actually go through the results of the survey and share those with everybody. The one difference between the survey this year and the one we did 2 years ago was 2 years ago we just surveyed the Clean Network, members of the Clean Network, those on the listserv. This time we sent out the survey and we basically had sets of questions for three different communities. One was the Clean Network, and they got all the questions. Then were those people who were not members of the Clean Network but were aware of the Clean Network, and they got about two-thirds of the questions. And then people who were not aware of the Clean Network but for whatever reason got the survey, we asked people to send it out to anybody who was a climate change education stakeholder of any at any level. And those people really got mostly the questions around collective impact and how an overarching backbone support organization could help them leverage and extend their work and what kinds of things that they might like to take from a network. So we got that kind of input. So that was the scope of the survey this past fall. And so that's what I shared at the meeting last week, and we'll be sharing further. The AAAS meeting will be a really nice symposium. I'll give that overview, and then we'll have Carrie McDougall from NOAA, but basically from the tri-agency climate change education programs, tri-agency being NASA, NOAA, and NSF. The program officers from the climate change education programs from those three agencies got together to help facilitate that broader climate change education PI community. And we'll hear from them about how they've tried to leverage those efforts. And then we will have a presentation from Nicole Ardwin from ChangeScale in San Francisco. ChangeScale is a local collective impact effort around climate change. They've actually developed their program based on the collective impact model and have done some research around how that has worked for them and how it's worked for other groups in terms of trying to build a collective impact effort. And so that'll be the third. And then we'll have a panel discussion, and the idea is to, again, get input from the broader community on how we might coordinate efforts better. So that's kind of the goal of that session in a couple of weeks. I think it's on February 13th is when the session is.
Tomorrow, I'm doing just a quick look for ChangeScale on Google, and I'm not finding ChangeScale San Francisco. What am I doing wrong?
ChangeScale is one word.
Yeah. Oh, actually, okay, I just found it. Sorry. Okay.
So, there's actually, I mean, it's really been interesting over time. Scott and possibly other people on the phone and I were part of the conversations very early on in 2009 and 10 when we were talking about how do we coordinate and help people share experiences and efforts and resources. And we really came down on that the efforts really most likely needed to be regionally focused, just because the issues that are dealt with at the regional level vary from place to place. And so one effort nationally is not going to be able to really address all of the intricate little nuances of each region or community. So we began to try to develop a model for a regional clean network. And that ended up getting short-circuited by the way the National Science Foundation had put out its solicitations. And so it funded a group, originally 15 climate change education partnerships. Some of them are regionally focused, some of them were topically focused. And they had 2 years and then another solicitation for 5 years that they funded six projects to move forward. So in the first 2 years, they were supposed to develop a strategic plan on how they would move their effort forward. And then in the 5 years, they were supposed to implement that plan. Well, what's come out of that is that there are six projects now, and some of them have a national reach, like NOAA, which is the National Ocean a Network for Ocean Interpretation. I forget what all the letters mean. But they really are a network of aquarium and zoos and science centers across the country, but they work with the interpreters at those museums to help them hone how to best communicate those messages to the public, how to get the best engagement so that people really do understand. So that's at one end of the spectrum, a national reach, but each individual group is in their own local context. And then there is the Climate Change Education Partnership in San Diego, which is addressing key influentials, basically the decision makers of San Diego. So you have two different ends of the spectrum, and yet both of them, really the nitty-gritty on the ground people are really addressing the local issues. And so it's sort of come around now as we've been working with, we really were only introduced to the collective impact model at the end of 2012. So we really didn't develop the clean network with that in mind. However, one of the elements of collective impact is continuous communication, and with our listserv and our weekly telecons, we are addressing that pretty well. But there's a lot of services that could be provided by an overarching backbone support organization. And the input that we've gotten from the community is, yes, there are regional efforts, and you might think of this more as a network of networks. So that's where we're trying to move now, and to how to define that in a way where we can then go after funding to support these efforts. That's a key piece, is to try to identify funding opportunities. And it's been the federal agencies, the climate change education funding began to decrease seriously in 2013. Mm-hmm. And foundation support is just not there. Organizations that they are really not as much interested in educational efforts. So that's been really a hard sell. So we've been trying to develop something that we can sell a little bit more, appeal to some of these various other kinds of funding organizations. And I'll say up front, I'm no expert in this, but in terms of identifying funding sources, but we've been working really hard over time to try to get in, because another piece is to get that we've been trying to get this input so that there is that whatever we do develop really does address the needs of this broader community, and that there's buy-in from this larger community. So that's kind of where the direction of these conversations has been going over time. And this As Scott said, we coordinate a series of sessions at the AGU meeting, American Geophysical Union meeting. It provides an opportunity. It's really the largest gathering of climate change education educators anywhere. We do have a session at GSA, but really, I mean, in comparison, at GSA last year we had 14 papers, and at AGU we had over 100 papers. So it's just a much more it's a much bigger meeting, and it attracts the broader diversity of professions, and it, both in the sciences and outside the sciences. So it is a meeting that really does help this community communicate with each other. Are there any other questions or any other announcements?
Certainly all I have.
I was at a climate change event the other day. I still haven't bumped into that group you said here in San Diego. We did have a big climate meeting down at Scripps the other day, and it was a girl named Who. I could send you her name. I still don't know what the climate change group in San Diego is. Here I am.
Okay, well, I can send out the actually we probably could even have I know that one of the CSET, the other CSET, Milky, had a presentation yesterday from that group, and if they have the if they've recorded it and posted that, I can send that out to the Clean Network listserv, and you can learn more firsthand from those people. If not, I can just send you the names of the leads that I know there and their website.
Do you know someone named Cindy Hooven? I mean, Cody Hooven?
No.
Well, we could have a separate exchange, but she seems to be in charge. She seems to have just gotten a position as climate officer for the city of San Diego.
What's the last name, Cody?
H-O-O-V-E-N, and C-O-D-Y.
Okay.
Climate mitigation.
Yeah.
So it's about resilience and mitigation in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'll get in touch with you separately, and we'll see if we can figure out.
Okay. Okay.
But it does certainly suggest a presentation from them, even one for this call would be really helpful, too. The recording is great if it's there, but it also helps to have a chance to ask questions.
So you're saying that presentation was about resiliency in San Diego?
Well, what
that
I was referring
to... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Martha.
No, the thing I was talking about was it scripts a different thing.
Scripts itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, are there any other comments or questions? Well, I'll just remind everybody, as we were talking about at the beginning, about next week, we're still in the process of defining the structure of the call, but we really would like people to think about resources that they may have or may know of that address solutions to climate change impacts. And because we're going to be looking for those kinds of resources for the Clean Collection.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, thanks, everybody, for calling in, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Okay. Bye.